This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, we'll hear from State Senate candidate Lawrence Winke. The former Republican state representative is running as a Libertarian in the 20th State Senate District that includes Kalamazoo County. But first, how to improve education is a topic of regular discussion in this state and elsewhere. Bridge, the online news service of the Center for Michigan, is examining what some other states have done in education and what lessons can be learned from them. Ron French is senior writer for Bridge. Ron French, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What states did you choose and why those?
We ended up visiting Minnesota, Tennessee, Florida, and Massachusetts. It was interesting. We looked at a lot of states and a lot of data, and we wanted to look at states that either had high student achievement or fast-growing student achievement. And we're measuring those by the one standardized test that is taken by all 50 states called the National Assessment of Educational Performance. And Massachusetts and Minnesota are very high-achieving, have been for a number of years, and are continuing to increase their scores. Tennessee and Florida, interestingly enough, a decade ago, both had scores significantly lower than Michigan's test scores. Since then, their scores have surpassed Michigan, and Tennessee is the fastest growing state in the nation in these test scores. So something's going on in all of these states, and what we wanted to do is try to look at these states, visit them, and get a sense of whether there are some state policies in place there that are impacting these scores that we might be able to steal and use in Michigan.
Well, let's begin with Minnesota, which is a fellow Great Lakes state. And many progressives here in Michigan have been saying that this is a state that Michigan should look to as a role model. So what is Minnesota doing in broad terms to make their test scores go up? As you say, they're already higher than Michigan's, and they're improving faster than we are.
Sure. Interestingly enough, you would think with Minnesota's reputation as a high-tax state, and it is a high-tax state, you'd think that, well, the answer must be money. But actually, they spend almost identically the same amount of money that Michigan spends per pupil. Their teacher salaries are slightly lower than Michigan's, so it's not money. Minnesota was the birthplace of charter schools, but they have fewer charter schools than Michigan, so it's not charter schools. So what is going on there? There are a couple of things that are unique about Minnesota that I think Michigan can learn some lessons from. First and foremost, they have an early childhood program, which no other state has, where it's universal. Anyone can go to it, no matter how much money you make, no matter what your background, that is for ages birth to kindergarten. And in that program, it's not just someplace where you drop off your kids. The parents come too, and there is supervised playtime with the parent and the child together. And what happens is these certified teachers who are specialize in early learning work with the parents to teach them how to play in a way that helps the children learn. And so really what happens in Minnesota is there's a concerted effort to make parents be the child's first teacher. And it's something that's been going on for 40 years, and we think it has a major impact.
Does Michigan have anything which compares to this? We do know that there has been an effort, pretty bipartisan and across the board in Michigan, to increase funding for early childhood education. Is there anything in Michigan which compares to what they're doing in Minnesota?
Michigan has the Great Start Readiness Program, which is a great program for four-year-olds. It's a program that is specifically for low and moderate income families. It's a great service, and it's very good that Michigan has expanded. What Minnesota also has a version of that. What Michigan does not have is anything of significance that tries to work with children and parents of 0 to 3. And that's something that perhaps we're going to need to try to look at.
So Minnesota and Michigan are spending roughly the same amount per pupil on education. Is Minnesota, though, distributing the money differently? Are they spending it in ways which are different from what we're doing in Michigan?
What Minnesota does is that they funnel more money in a very concerted effort to schools with higher concentrations of poverty. In Michigan, you have a per pupil allotment, which is generally the same across schools. In Minnesota, there is a base of that, but then a school with a high level of poverty could get as much as between $2,000 and $3,000 more per pupil than a wealthier suburban district. And what that does is those schools where there is the greatest need, because, you know, students from low-income families generally struggle more than students from suburban families. So what that does is it allows those low-income schools to hire more staff. One example of a school I visited in Minnesota, they had 26 classrooms, pretty standard type of elementary school, but they had, among that, they also had six teachers that were just floating, that worked with small groups of students. They had two English as a second language teachers full-time, and they had a full-time social worker. And those are seem like luxuries here, but in Minnesota, it's normal.
You also note that if we look at the economic indicators, Minnesota seems to be better off, a much lower unemployment rate, per capita income higher in Minnesota than it is in Michigan. Do the people in Michigan and, you know, any sort of what we could call objective experts who've looked at it believe that those things are linked? In other words, that because Minnesota has made these improvements in their education system, it has led to better economic conditions?
I think most experts say that. Another example of a state we're going to be writing about in the next few weeks is Massachusetts, which had a terrible economy 30, 40 years ago. It has a great economy now. What did they do? They focused their efforts on education. Minnesota did the same thing, and you see the outcome. Minnesota has one of the highest rates of college attainment in the nation. I know that some critics may say, well, as your income goes up, student test scores generally go up. And so is it really fair to compare Minnesota and Michigan at this point? That's a fair criticism until you then look at the scores of low-income students, because they're counted the same, because they're all a free and reduced lunch eligible student in Minnesota is the same as a free and reduced lunch eligible student in Michigan. Their low-income students do much better than our low-income students. So something's going on there, and it's helping their kids. And because they have higher graduation rates, higher college attainment rates, that helps the economy.
Tennessee, on the other hand, is a state which lags behind Michigan on many of those economic indicators. And as you report, the test scores in Tennessee are still below the national average, or below the median anyway, of states across the nation. But those scores are going in the right direction, on their way up. What has Tennessee done?
They've taken a different approach, and this goes to show that there isn't just one answer to this sort of thing, Gordon. What Tennessee has done is a couple of things. One, Tennessee has been very aggressive on high-stakes evaluations, both for teachers and for students. Tennessee retains its third graders in third grade if they're not reading at a certain level. They retain eighth graders if they're not scoring at a proficiency level. They also have a program where teachers can lose their jobs if over a period of several years their students are not growing in achievement as much as they should be. But going along with that, they didn't just put this hammer out there saying we're going to get rid of bad teachers. What they did is in Tennessee, they spent a lot of money on teacher training. That really needs to go hand in hand with a tough evaluation system. That if you're going to say we're going to hold you accountable, you also need to be able to say, here's how we're going to help teachers learn the new standards. Here's how we're going to help them become better teachers. Because, you know, in the end, Gordon, we're all trying to help the students learn more. And so how do you do that? It's not just by threatening teachers. It's by helping teachers become better teachers.
And your reporting actually shows that very few teachers have been fired as a result of these standards, correct?
Yes, and I think that should be expected here in Michigan also. That's what gets the headlines. And frankly, perhaps that gives some incentive for schools to buckle down. I don't know, but I do know that what has really changed the culture in the schools in Tennessee hasn't been the threat of losing jobs. It's been the incredible increase in confrontation that teachers and are having among themselves and between teachers and principals, because part of the evaluation process is a lot more of classroom observation. So, you know, it's the coaching that, you know, that's what's important that has happened in Tennessee.
As you and I speak on Tuesday afternoon, people can go to the Bridge website and read your stories on Minnesota and Tennessee. You do have something coming up on Florida. Can you give us a little idea of what Florida has done in terms of education?
Florida's done a couple of things. One, they were the earliest adopter of something that is very common now, which is linking student test scores to teacher evaluations. And there were pluses and minuses to that. It's still controversial. But the other thing that Florida is really known for and makes a big difference there, you know, Florida used to be ranked in a lot of these sort of rankings, education rankings, 49th. They're still in the middle of the pack, but they've really gone up and they've passed Michigan. What Florida did is they put a huge, massive emphasis on early grade reading skills. They invested a lot of money and a lot of effort and a lot of training into helping kids learn to read by the end of their third grade. And they, too, have a third grade retention program. But the point is that they retain very few because they put this huge emphasis on training. And so that is something that we need to look at, too, is if we think that it's important to read by the end of third grade, then the emphasis isn't about like saying, by gosh, we're going to hold these kids back until they learn. The emphasis really needs to be on how are we going to help these kids. You know, it's extra staff, extra programs, and extra training for the teachers.
So, Ron, you've taken a look at some other states, and of course, you know, the reaction back here in Michigan is to wonder what we should take here. And I guess one thing we wonder is, are there some differences in how states govern, perhaps some cultural differences in other states that might make things that work very well in Tennessee or Florida or Minnesota not work so well in Michigan? Did you find anything in your reporting that indicated that, or do you think that these things are very evidence-based, and if we wanted to bring them to Michigan, we could, it's a matter of political will and perhaps so being willing to spend the money?
Different things are working in different states, but I think you hit on the key there. It's a matter of political will and building a consensus around a reform effort and sticking to it. When I've gone to state leaders in other states and asked for their say, what advice would you give to a legislator in Michigan? They say, come up with a reform, you know, get people behind it and stick with it. This is something that will take 15, 20 years. It will be, it'll go through 2, 3, 4 governors before you really see a massive amount of results. But you have to be willing to stick with it past a few years. So the keys are not that one thing works in each state. It's that all these states, no matter what approach they took, they chose a reform, they've stuck with it, and they've been patient.
Ron French, thank you for your time. Ron French is senior writer for Bridge, the online news service of the Center for Michigan. The Bridge series on education in other states and the possible implications for Michigan is called The Smartest Kids. You can find links to those stories at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There is a three-way race for state senate this year in the district that includes Kalamazoo County. During his 6 years in the legislature, Lawrence Wenke was a Republican. Now he's seeking the state senate seat in the 20th district as a Libertarian. Lawrence Wenke, thank you for being here.
Good to be here, Gordon.
We're also joined today by Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Alex Mitchell.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
Lawrence Wenke, why don't you briefly, if you could, reintroduce yourself to our audience and tell us what you would like to do if you're elected to the state senate.
Very briefly, most people know me as the owner of Wenke Greenhouses, a company that I've developed and led along with family members for the last 40 years. So I'm well known for being a small business owner in our community. And about 18 years ago, I became a Kalamazoo County Commissioner, where I served for 8 years, 3 years as County Board Chair. And then I went from that office to a state representative seat in Lansing, where I served for 6 years in the House of Representatives. And then the Constitution of Michigan limits us to 6 years, and you're termed out. And I went back to the family business and more vacation, more retirement type of activities. When I get to Lansing, I've recently published a list of 16 things that I would like to work on. I'll be happy to talk about anybody with those, or to send them to anybody. But basically, the Libertarian Party believes in more freedom and less government, and our position is that our government is just simply too big, too intrusive, too powerful, too expensive, and needs to be reduced.
Alex Mitchell, first question for Lawrence Wanky.
Lawrence, passing a sustainable road funding package remains a hot issue heading into the fall. You said yesterday during a candidate forum at Senior Services in Kalamazoo that you're not in favor at this time of raising the 19-cent gasoline tax, but you said that you could be convinced that that would be the path to funding Michigan's roads. What would convince you that that would be a necessary step?
Well, I certainly would like to know what other monies are available. Certainly, the economy of Michigan and the nation has pumped a lot of money into Michigan's general fund budget, and there certainly is a lot of money there, and quite a bit of it has been dedicated to roads. So funding for roads has been increased from the general fund. I'd like to know how our money is spent. There is a formula for when we pay that 19 cents a gallon tax as to just who gets the money. I'd like more involvement in knowing who gets it and what they do with it. I'd like to know what other choices there are. We've heard about putting a tax on brokers of gasoline, producers of gasoline, and that might be a better place to put the tax than simply to add to the 19 cents a gallon state tax that exists right now. So there are other choices, and when you're in the legislature, you get a chance to ask those questions. I and one other candidate met with the County Road Commission a couple of months ago now, and you learn a lot when you talk to the people who actually do the work and spend the money and get the money. And as a candidate, you really don't have those opportunities. But I still think that it is a real bargain to what we get for our 19 cents a gallon in tax, gasoline taxes. It hasn't been raised in many years, I think over 20 years since that tax per gallon has been increased. So I think what we get for it is a good benefit. I think most of us spend far more on our cell phones than what we do on taxes to fund our roads that we drive on every day, and we require those roads to be plowed and repaired and rebuilt and to be safe, the traffic lights to work. So I think we get good value for our 19 cents a gallon. There are other taxes as well that we have to remember, but for the state, they get 19 cents a gallon. And the cost of what they do has gone up enormously in the last 10 years. Certainly with salt is the latest example, which is, I think, tripled in price in the last 6 years. They've got good reasons to be asking for more money, and I think they probably will get it. And if I were in Lansing, I probably would vote for an increase in the per gallon tax, but I'd like to know more about it before I did.
Would you support a move to institute a sales or use tax on internet transactions in Michigan?
Yes, I think that we're not talking here about taxing the internet. I'm not talking about taxing someone's email address. But when purchases are made over the internet, I think those purchases should be subject to the same local sales tax. In Michigan right now, it's 6%. Those purchases should be subject to the same sales tax as if you went to the neighborhood store and purchase that product. And when I was in the legislature in Lansing, I introduced and got passed a bill that made Michigan part of a consortium of states that were trying to get that done. It has to really be done by the federal government because they made a law against it, and that law needs to be changed. And those of us who've got brick and mortar businesses, that are local. We collect that tax when we sell a product. And we're the people that local people go to for employment, for property taxes, for school taxes, for charitable donations. We should not have to charge more than somebody outside of our state has to charge for the same product. And that happens in my industry. Well, I sell things in my business that you can buy on the internet and pay no taxes on it, no sales tax. It's not fair. Should be changed.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with former state representative Lawrence Wenke, who is running for state senate as a libertarian in the 20th district, which includes all of Kalamazoo County. We are also joined today by Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Alex Mitchell. Lawrence, let me ask you about gay rights. This is one of the issues where you have parted company with the Republican Party. If you had a vote in the legislature on the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act, would you vote to amend it to include protections for sexual orientation and gender identity?
Yes, I certainly would. And if I were in the legislature and nobody else introduced the bill, I would introduce it myself. I find it absolutely amazing to me that the Republican Party, after all these years, is still supporting, defending discrimination against our gay family members, friends, and neighbors. This is an issue which is just so difficult for me to understand and so frustrating. And I believe that the Elliot Larson Act will be amended before the end of the year. I'm hopeful that it will be, but it could still be quite a battle. I don't think that citizens are aware that at Wenke Greenhouses, if I want to, I can go home from this interview and I can walk up to the employees that we have that are gay and I can fire them. And I can simply say, I'm firing you because you're gay. And they have no recourse. They can't call the Michigan Labor Division like any other employee can. This is grossly unfair. This is absolutely inhumane and should be unconstitutional. I believe it is, and I think the Supreme Courts and judges will soon rule that it is. But yes, I would amend the Elliot Larson Act. Be one of the first things that I would try to do.
You believe that gay marriage should be legal?
Yes.
So if we can go back here in 2004, people will remember you cast a vote against putting the amendment to ban gay marriage on the ballot, which I think it's fair to say has altered the trajectory of your political career ever since. But at that time, were you for legalized gay marriage?
You know, it is a process that you go through when you first get involved in this issue. I can understand people's their need for education, need for understanding, but I think most of us are way beyond thinking that that gay people could have civil unions, which is what I thought at that time, quite frankly. I thought they'd same rights, same tax benefits, same everything, just a different name. But it wasn't but a few years later when I realized that that was the wrong thing to do. It was still discrimination. It was still not treating them equally. And I certainly don't support that right now. Gay people should be able to get married and be treated just like everybody else in every circumstance.
Alex.
If you'd been a member of the legislature earlier this year when the minimum wage vote was cast, would you have voted in favor to increase it?
Yes, I think the minimum wage should be increased. The exact amount, I think, is certainly debatable. I think the minimum wage should be indexed to inflation, but not at the full rate of inflation. We can't have everybody's pay indexed to the full rate of inflation, or we'll have a lot of inflation, it seems to me. But yes, I would vote to raise the minimum wage. There's a whole lot of government-involved rules and regulations we live by, and I'd be interested in a whole package of them being reduced or eliminated, but we shouldn't start with the working poor in terms of not making rules and regulations that are good for them. So at my company, we're way beyond the minimum wage and have been for some time. I think most companies are way beyond it. The current minimum wage before it was raised, babysitters that I know weren't working for that. So I don't think too many businesses are really affected by it, and I don't think we've heard a whole lot about it since. Of course, it just was enacted just a few weeks ago, I believe. So, but all in all, can the government simply tell people what their pay rates ought to be and have it work out well in the economy? It can be pushed too far. It can be a real danger and trouble. If the minimum wage goes up too high, too fast, there is not enough time for businesses to adjust to it. And we've got to be careful about that. Most of the prices in the country now are determined by the big box stores, and they are not quick to respond to the need for price increases.
Let me ask you a little bit about changing parties. You were originally in this race as a Republican. You were going to run for state senate as a Republican. You withdrew and switched to the Libertarians. So I guess I'm wondering at what point did the light bulb go on? Because as you say, you were Republican your whole life up until April?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the two things really made that change for me. The Kalamazoo Gazette published the pension benefits for all the early retirement options for Kalamazoo City employees. They made quite a story out of that. I've cut that paper out, and it's in my office. That really sent a message to me that there was a lot of work to do when it came to government employee compensation. I think that should be more well-known than what it is, but I don't know how to get the word out any better than what the media does. So that was a real strong motivator for me. And also Attorney Bill Schuette just continuing to contest the ruling by Judge Friedman in Detroit on equal rights for two women who want to adopt children. Judge Friedman ruled in their favor, and Bill Schuette thought he had to appeal that to the next level of federal court justices, I believe, in Cincinnati. So the continuing opposition of Republicans to equal rights for our gay family members, the obvious exploitation of taxpayers by City of Kalamazoo employees, the lack of Republican response. And I know some of the Republicans who were they were elected officials in the city of Kalamazoo who said nothing and did nothing. So I thought it was time for me to change.
But in the course of this interview, you have said that you were in favor of an internet sales tax, a sales tax on purchases over the internet. You were in favor of raising the minimum wage. You said that you're not sure about legalizing marijuana. Now, all of these are things where you're somewhat in varying opposition to what the Libertarian Party has said that they stand for on these issues. I guess what some people wonder, and I'm going to ask you now, is Lawrence Wienke and the Libertarian Party a marriage of political convenience?
No, it isn't. It isn't for me. They're right on the two biggest issues in my life, which is equal rights for our gay family members. They have that as one of their platforms. They certainly talk a lot about government being too big, too intrusive, too powerful, too expensive, too much debt. Those are the two big issues for me. But libertarians are just as divided as what other parties are over issues like government involvement, over abortion, over drugs. Why, the Libertarian Party that I know is very much divided over those things.
Lawrence Wienke, thank you for your time.
Good to be here, Gordon. Thank you.
Lawrence Wienke is a candidate for state senate in the 20th district, which includes all of Kalamazoo County. He is running as the Libertarian candidate for that seat. And thanks again to Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Alex Mitchell.
Thanks, Gordon.
WMUK has invited candidates for statewide office, the legislature, and Congress for interviews on West Southwest. We'll bring you those candidate interviews through the end of October. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.